all bright down at the other end of this table. We're glad to have several observers. Just a word to them, the observers. It may be that at first we appear to you to be confused, and we probably will be. And that it's all nebulous, and it probably will be. But I think if you stick with us long enough, it'll begin to make a little sense. And you will probably be able to pick up some clarification as we go along. We will use the model, it's a big form, big chart that should come in soon, in terms of guidance or direction. Simply keeps us somewhat on the track. You will be able to follow that with us and probably make a little more sense out of it near the end. About 5 minutes before we adjourn, it will probably then all fall in place. Does each one have a copy of the minutes before him?
No.
Do we have an extra copy over there?
How you doing to you?
Hello, Dan,
I have one note here, Chairman Dialogue Session. Councilman Tom Hum is at present in San Francisco and will not be able to attend the dialogue session this morning. Where is he in San Francisco, Chairman?
I really don't know, sir.
Where are
Probably an FEC
meeting. So we'll take 5 minutes, not more than eight, to look at the minutes, any reaction, pick up from there on what we're supposed to continue with today. The minutes for December 15, 1967.
I took it out and used it.
Any comments on the minutes as they are written?
We have several
pages of the minutes. They're rather long this time. Any comments?
I give you this one.
Deletions, additions? If not, will we turn over to page? Already? Have to move over to somebody else's paper, is that? Yeah.
Why go ahead, I guess.
I meant to tell you, George, you can hear this.
I see.
How many are? Two. While he's taking care of the chairs, may I comment on having the councilman back who has reported in the papers or on TV something that happened to him. He has his crutches this morning. I'm sure he'd want us all to know that. Mike Schaefer.
I had my crutches there on the wall.
And we're glad to have Hamilton Marston back. Mr. Marston? Oh, there you are. Glad to have you back. Noted in the minutes that he has been out ill. On the last page, if we may turn to that.
Need more?
Yeah, they're getting some more. Custodian.
Yeah.
We'll have some more chairs in just a moment. On the last page, we might pick up where we left off the last time. Beginning after number 14 on the minutes, it said after different perceptions have been obtained, there was general discussion regarding suggested directions for action. It was agreed that the statement of the facts regarding the EOC program differed greatly depending on the sources, and that there was a need for investigation to determine what the actual facts were and to reach agreement on acceptance of these facts by each side. It pointed out that what is being done is coming up with a different perception in terms of revealing attitude. Now, skipping down to the next paragraph, it further states, discussion was held on the role of this group, whether or not it should be a facilitator of action. It was stated that it was hoped that members of the committee would report back to the others the kinds of reactions they had heard today. Regardless of whether or not they agreed with those reactions. Now, coming all the way down to the last paragraph, it states, it was decided that there was further need to explore differential attitudes about the EOC at the next meeting, and that this topic should be broadened to how the community views the entire war on poverty program. So that then we can start out with understanding where we're going and what we propose to do today by continuing the topic, I'll take just a minute out to suggest how we might proceed. First, we looked at the topic, the EOC, the Economic Opportunity Commission, with reference to the reactions of the minority community to the public criticism of that program or facets of it. Not the validity or the lack of validity of the criticism, but the reaction of the community, minority community particularly, to those comments. At the last meeting, we probably violated our most sacred rule to some degree. And as chairman, I should like to suggest that we stay away from that today and see if we can observe maybe our basic rule a little more closely, namely that though we were supposed to have been talking about the reactions to the criticism, we found ourselves at times, individually, criticizing the individual who was here to simply give us reactions, give us his own perception of these reactions. We found ourselves in a bag, as we say, because at times it began to be an individual attack. I agree with those who felt the same thing, and this is just a caution that maybe we should all be more aware. We have agreed that we will not simply attack individuals, but look at the program and the method in this case. Today, as we move on, may I caution all of us again to be conscious of the fact that we should not be putting a man across the carpet. We should be having his reactions and move from him then back to the topic or to the area that we are discussing. Today we're to continue with the EOC reactions, the reactions of the community, and look at how this ties in with the entire program called the EOC, Economic Opportunity Program, as outlined in the last paragraph. One other reaction before we begin. One of the feedbacks that we received, and I understand others received, was alluded to by one member present at the end of last session, namely that he personally did not really perceive how the EOC, the reactions to the criticisms of the EOC, really were in the bailiwick that we are dealing with, that is majority relations, or tension, or differential perception, or racial discrimination. He did not see how this really was the proper topic here, tying in with feelings about race. I would like to stop here and see if we can clarify that point, because if we're not sure among ourselves that this is the proper topic, then maybe confusion will result again. Seems to me that maybe one of the reasons we need to talk about this for a minute or two is because some in the majority, these reactions were back from the majority, maybe the majority did not really see how the minority felt about this whole program and the criticisms. Maybe that's the reason why we need to stop for a moment and be sure that all of us understand how this program does affect attitudes, tension, and the whole bit of racial discrimination. Jack, I saw your hand up.
Carol, I didn't want to address myself to that topic, but I think it's an important one, and I'll just wait until someone else may raise the question.
Let me raise the question then so that we can get it on the table. How may words be used to express the felt feeling that the EOC, or the criticisms of the EOC, or the whole program itself, is in the area of affecting minorities with regard to racial attitudes? How may we express the felt feeling that the program, Warm Poverty, is in the area that deals with, has a bearing on, racial attitudes?
Who brought it up?
Well, I received about 3 calls, for example. On the phone, I explained this, that I think it was. Minorities view this as all the things we put on the board, for example, representing against attacks and all the other things we put here to maintain the status quo. It's a criticism of the poor and the minority, all the differential perceptions we put on the board. I simply went through that. But they indicated to me that there may be others in the room here today who really didn't understand how this affected minority attitudes toward the majority and majority attitudes toward the minority. And I think we ought to maybe get somebody of opinion besides mine who can say it maybe even better. Max?
Now, is it a requirement that I be able to say it better?
Yes, it may be.
I think in the first place, many members of the minority look upon the EOC program as something that was instituted to help them. They think, when they think of the poor, they think of themselves as the poor. Whether this is statistically true is beyond the point. They think whenever you talk about a program to help the poor, they think immediately about the program aimed at helping us. So anytime anybody does anything that seems to weaken that program, it's looked upon as an attack upon, just another attack upon us. I think that this is a feeling in the community. And so I think it was quite legitimate that we discussed this, that there was a difference of opinion as to whether or not there was an attack.
This is not intended as a pun, but perhaps that's a minority opinion that you received concerning the subject, and this is not the majority.
Minority from by majorities, right? They were white, you called me, I'm saying.
No, but what I'm saying is that could be a very minority.
Right.
I think
use minority in the other sense. Bill?
Along the same lines, that I think one of the problems is that the majority community looks upon the poverty program in the area of race relations, not in the total poverty picture. That most people feel it is aimed at minority groups, that it is for minority groups, 100%, that the rest of the community is not involved in it. That's a perception.
Bob?
I was going to say somewhat the same that Bill said, and that is I move around the community. I'm working with so-called disadvantaged groups, and the perception that I have of the dominant power structures are white. Is that regardless of how poor they are, the disadvantage is always a member of a visible minority group, either color-wise or language-wise. Now, I think the average majority member thinks in terms of a disadvantage or a poor individual as being someone other than themselves. So it just naturally falls into the category of race relations when you think in terms of war on poverty. And so I see that it was a very legitimate thing that we were trying to do last period. And a necessary thing.
Legitimate and necessary thing. Mike?
Another thing is that regardless of what race or creed you are, if you're in the middle class, they have a tendency not to know too much about the war on poverty period. And they're not versed on it at all.
I think in getting around to the method of criticism, why it is particularly apropos would be that one would perceive the method of criticism utilized for the program as a method of perceiving how one would be treated individually. And if the method of criticism utilized was less than professional, less than above board, less than would be given to any professional acceptance-type program or organization, it indicates really the perception of, I think, by the minority, that this is really the position that they would play, and they could expect to be treated this way with less than a professional attitude, less than an ethical attitude.
All right, Leon.
I think somebody raised a question over here a while ago. This might be a minority opinion. This might be a minority opinion that came to you by telephone. I wonder if it, if anyone in the room, it would be appropriate to ask anyone in the room if they share that opinion to say it so that we can talk about it. Or, I mean, otherwise, we've already stated, I think, and it was all done last week, why it appears to be a problem of race relations. And if someone didn't understand it that way, then maybe it ought to be talked about a little bit more from their point of view. Let them tell. Let them say why they think it isn't appropriate or wasn't appropriate.
Is there anyone who wishes to help us here by stating or asking us, just ask us specifically maybe some questions that are stated there? Otherwise, we can move on. Let's assume then that...
Let's move on then.
Let's separate this today then into two sections. Number one, continue talking about the method. The method of criticism. Not the validity of it. The method of criticism. And the suspended, as indicated in the minutes, extended to explore differential attitudes about the community, how the community views the entire program of war and poverty. At this point, Jack, are you ready to come in, or?
Yeah, Carol, I think that maybe the topic for our discussion might be the war on poverty itself. You know, the EOC is an administrative agency that's set up to conduct and administer the program. And one of the concerns we have is that it seems to us sometimes that the war on poverty should be something more than the Economic Opportunity Commission's concern. It really is a total concern of the whole community as to what we're doing for poor people, regardless of their race or ethnic background. And I would like to get some ideas about this in regard to how we can involve the total community in a way that the legislation had originally specified, so that it's more than the concern of the EOC or its delegate agencies. And we have 22 of them, and many of the people who are involved in the program right now are people who are on our board. Supervisor Dent, Mrs. Salk, representing the Citizens Interracial Committee, John Johnson, Mike Schaefer has been on, and Lloyd Morrow, Reverend Oxley. I would venture to say that at least half the people in this room have some connection with the war on poverty, and yet one gets the feeling that the war on poverty generally is not something that the community as a whole views as their problem. And as long as this feeling persists, and as long as there isn't an action program that's translatable that involves the public agencies, the mayor and the city council and the board of supervisors and private enterprise and all the voluntary associations, it's going to continue to operate on about two cylinders when really there's a tremendous amount of power that could be brought to bear on the problems of poor people. And when we talk about poor, we also talk to a very large extent about the racial and ethnic minorities, but not exclusively. And I think that as long as the people that we're trying to help get the feeling that it's a half-hearted effort, then there's always the danger that this effort is not going to be one that is accomplished through the social institutions that we have, but the more militant people in the community are going to to say, well, we're being let down, and we're going to have to create the kinds of disturbances that have been characteristic of other large urban areas and smaller ones, and that there are going to be riots and other kinds of social disturbances. This morning I heard a comment by Whitney Young, and Mr. Young said that when historians record the last summer, whether people want to believe this or not, they will say that this is the first time that the Negro has been recognized as an individual. And it was his point that it's better to be hated than ignored. And it's my concern, and I'm sure many other people's concern, that this is a really tough problem related to Negro and Mexican American people have been ignored, and that we really have not dealt with these problems in a way that, that would make it possible for us to assure the people involved that something is being done, that there really is some hope for them in the future.
All right, if I'm hearing you right and trying to capsule it, you're saying that in the whole expansion here of the war on poverty criticism, we should look at the institutions, for example, that should be more involved or deeply involved, and the role of the individuals who are not necessarily an institution, as we look at the whole criticism of the DOC. We'll get some reactions on that.
Well, Carol, it would appear to me that at the beginning of these dialogues that we had last summer, that one of the basic tenets, one of the main points, was the idea that the minority community was to get these points to the people who were, to voice our concern to the people who are in a position to do something. And I think this is what's going on. We're getting this information to people who previously may not have understood or various other reasons. But I think that this is the function of what we have been doing. And I think that there have been changes in attitude or values or whatever is coming up. We have a long way to go, but I think these things are happening. So, in regard to what Jack is saying, I think this is what we are trying to do, is get the word out, whether you're talking about the poverty program, whatever you're talking about. We're getting our concerns, minority concerns, out to the people who can do something about them.
So what I was trying to say, I think that we ought to face up to a fact of life that really the poverty program was set up, I think, to deal with a long-ignored problem in this country, the fact that poor people generally are not seen, that they live in communities of their own. And this is particularly true with the Mexican and the Negro, where there is almost, well, certainly for the Negro, Southeast San Diego is regarded as a ghetto area. In many respects, because there isn't free movement outside of it. This isn't to say that people choose, and a lot of people choose to live there and will continue to live there. But before I came to the program, one of the things that always worried me was that there wasn't really enough being done in the area, and that there was a possibility that we could move fast enough and quick enough to avoid what's happened in other large urban areas where the lines were so hardened that there was no real communication between these two communities. And that the United Fund, for example, wasn't putting enough money into the area because the way it set up the agencies that received the bulk of the funds were those agencies that were doing services for the middle class. And this isn't a criticism. Middle-class people need help, too. But the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, there aren't very many troops in Southeast San Diego, if there are any. I think for the first time, these groups are trying to figure out how to do something. But the point is that probably three-fourths or more of the money that's collected wasn't being directed towards poor people. And by poor people, we also speak of Negro and Mexican-American people. The agencies in that area, working in the area, constantly came together, the welfare department, the welfare of counsel, and we kept thinking, well, what can we do? But there were never enough resources that were directed toward that area. The war on poverty, to some extent, has changed that. There was one neighborhood center in southeast San Diego run by Neighborhood House, and that started in 1900. As a result of the war on poverty, there are now at least six centers in southeast San Diego. The people in that area never really had access to neighborhood legal services. They had to come downtown. As a result of this program, there is a program in that area, legal services for poor people. Tutorial programs were established and brought under the Urban League. A lot of things have happened to fill the vacuum, but not enough is happening in my judgment, and not enough is happening fast enough. And I think that the people sense this, and I think that if we're going to avoid the kinds of problems that other communities have had, we're going to have to move a lot faster. And there is hope here, because I think there is a disposition to deal with the problem, as evidenced by the people around this table. And I don't want to use this occasion to make speeches. I really didn't come prepared to do that. But I do feel it is occasion to deal realistically, or try to deal realistically with the problems, and what can we do, both in the public and the private sector, to handle these. One of the things that impresses me is that after the riots in Detroit, Detroit businessmen got together, and they found that they could produce 250 jobs a week. Well, if they could do it, you know, after the riots, why couldn't they do it before the riots? It takes some will and some understanding of the problem to make these kinds of commitments, and I think we owe it to ourselves and the community to start working in this direction.
Jack has really taken us back to, seems to me, Jack, where George and Utley and several of the others have mentioned here lately, that what I hear him saying is, there is an urgency to doing something about this whole area, which is a little different from the way we started out, but maybe this is what several have been leading up to, an urgency now to do something about some action. Bob?
Well, to me, as I listen to Jack, what I feel he's talking about is the climate that exists among human organizations. And the climate that we have here in this city, as in any metropolitan area, is a climate of fear and distrust. And if I were going to attack the climatic condition existing in this city, my first point of departure would be with the communication media that we have existing, because as I move around, I see the data flow that is going out is sensational, and because our news medias will only show extreme interest in the sensational aspect of news reporting, that if I would stick a finger at anyone and blame anyone for an increase in hostility existing in our city, and they are increasing as far as I'm concerned, I would blame the newspapers, our process of releasing data into the total community. And I don't think that our newspapers and other medias of communication are doing a just job for the American dream. If anything, they're destroying it, as far as I'm concerned, an individual. And I feel this is what we have is a very, very inefficient, a very, very distrustful climate among all of us. I'm not even sure that the war of poverty really is doing anything, because the newspapers give the idea that they're doing nothing but drawing fat salaries.
George,
I think you want to respond to Bob, and I did not.
Right.
No, I didn't want particularly to respond to Bob, but what's occurring to me is that this whole thing came up over the method of criticism, the economic opportunity program, and not so much on the need for the program, it seems to me. And that's what we talked about last time. That is a method of criticism. What are we going to do? How are we going to run the program? It was really more the issue than the need for it. And it seems to me that's where we ought to be now.
This is precisely my point as the chairman on the conducting of the program itself, how they're administered, how they're carried out. There was no prerequisite or criteria that was a related establishment and working in poverty programs before poverty program came about itself. In other words, what I'm saying is it has tended to be a person who is a social science major or who has been a past social worker has been supposedly the best suited worker to work within the poverty program. And I contend that that's a complete lie, because if that was the true necessity, then the poverty program funds would have been turned over to the Department of Welfare to administer through the Department of Welfare. So they had found that the agency that existed was inadequate to run such a program. Therefore, it became an autonomous group within itself. Now, speaking of prerequisites, and certainly this is what is always spoken of when we talk about fat salaries, it is said that, well, to get good qualified people, you must pay them good salaries. That's true. But you see, we have used a different type of, we're using the same systematic criteria for qualification as we've always used within the system. And that system has not been best for the need of the people in this country, the poor people in the country. But we use the same systematic procedure for selecting poverty people as we use for selecting people in the Department of Welfare, people with the county, the Boy Scouts, the same thing. So we have the same problem created now within the poverty program that we've always had, for an example, within the Department of Welfare. Attitudes are not developed in those social science classes at San Diego State College. There must be an atmosphere and an attitude of an individual who works and administers this program that's in concern with his constituents, who are the poor people, and not in concern with the administration who administers the funds. So as a result, we have people now who are still being slighted, but they're best qualified now by the prerequisites, which were sit down for the job, but the prerequisites were sit down by the same establishment that was already established. Now, I say that this establishment is not adequate to administer the poverty program, and that's why you have the inadequacies, I think, within the program itself. Now, you say, well, you can't get an idiot to run a poverty program and administer funds. You see, my determination of an idiot may not be the same as yours. Who I would call an idiot, you may not call him one. You may call him highly intelligent, and vice versa. So what I'm saying is here that people who have said that they were not qualified in the eyes of those who were part of the system to establish qualification, in my eyes, that's a lie, because I look at another point of qualification. And I've seen this throughout the announcements for the poverty programs of all the different jobs. And I say that the many agencies, EOC itself, the different programs who administer poverty funds now with the different organizations, establish a criteria which is based upon a system which caused the problem in the first place, and therefore all they're doing is perpetrating the problem. It just continues.
All right. I'd like to comment. George, is it not true that the people who are chosen to administer the poverty program are chosen by the board of directors of the poverty program, and the boards are made up almost entirely of people within the community?
That's not true. You see, when this first board was established here, black people were not even included in San Diego in the poverty program.
Well, I've been involved in several programs.
Get me clear now. I said when the Poverty Commission was first established in San Diego, there were no black people on the board of the poverty program.
I'm talking about the project.
I'm talking about you said the board was the people who chose
the board of the individual programs that are developed through the EOC, the various programs that are set up under EOC, the project boards, are made up of people from within the community. The project boards, in turn, are the ones who hire the people to administer the program that's set up. Is that not correct?
You mean the board of directors of each specific program, like
you name it. Yes,
but they're written with specification, which they call qualifications of an intelligent individual. Read any one of them. There's one on for jobs now. Read the qualifications for the director, for an example.
Just read. No, they are writing within the systematic thought of pleasing your system. Because if they don't please the system will say, you must rewrite it again. So they try to
who
do
writes
it
right. The choice?
Huh?
Who writes the system?
We're speaking of actually the people who are administering the program. We're speaking of black people who are minorities, who are people who are deprived, who are poor. But they're still trying to confine themselves within the system. In other words, they if they do not write this in accordance with the thinking of EOC downtown, for an example, or their own board, who has whites on their own board, then they will have to rewrite the situation because it is they want it to be a part of the system. In other words, the system has passed this on to them that they're thinking it has to become like theirs downtown, or they will not be right in making the decision.
This your whole group, Bob?
Well, I knew you would be very crowded here with concerned people, so I thought I'd bring you
Let them come around this way,
yes,
and I think you can find some places up here somewhere. We have a slight problem here.
I thought there was a big problem.
He's checking it now.
No, that's a bad arrangement in there because you keep talking to them instead of with them.
Yeah, the seating is bad in there. But maybe we can take a few minutes. Maybe if we get it too large, we'll need someplace. Yes.
It occurred to me that this is not a natural room for them. This is a problem for us.
Yes, thank you, Max. Did everybody get Max? Yes, do we have enough chairs as opposed to that room in that Julian Way?
Cal, can we stay here, though?
Yeah, I think we ought to. Can we get some chairs here? I don't really want those. Knows the group that just came in. Looks like he has members from his own training group. You going to be with us, Bob?
Well, if I can take a little bit of your time, Mr. Chairman, I must say I'm sorry for dropping in on announced like this, but I've been dropping into quite a few places on announced this morning. And first of all, I'm responsible for doing something about part of the problem in this town. It's not my problem, it's the entire town's problem. And I'm focusing this morning particularly in the area of employment. Because, quite frankly, I run a job training program, and I have to be concerned about what are the opportunities for people to employ after they go through a program. We get an awful lot of criticism about running the program. Some might be justified, some might not be, but I won't go into that. But what we are facing is a fantastic level of frustration in which we are given a mandate to do something about finding employment for disadvantaged people. And we try our best and then run into the awful situation where we find we're beaten before we start because the doors have already been closed. And purely an educational experience for these delightful young people. I took them through this building this morning, stopped at a couple of floors, and we asked one question, how many black people are employed? I had the delightful experience of being on the 11th floor, big sign, mayor's office, city council's office, and I was told there are no black people there. And it seems to me that this points out something that might be very odd, because in this room there's a fantastic amount of talent. In terms of salaries that are paid to the people or the value of the time that is spent here, it's a fantastic amount of money, these meetings. Now, I've been asking, how long has this dialogue group been meeting? And I've been told for
Grand Summit. Frankly, I'm not in a position to go back to the ghetto and report that anything significant has been accomplished. And here I am laying a very serious charge on all the people are here, because it seems to be a very shocking state of affairs when all this talent representing the finest, the cream of the crop in the city, has been meeting from last summer. And good grief, I haven't been able to hear anything. Now, what do I tell people in the ghetto? This morning, I talked to a gentleman here, and he told me he was very concerned. But I had to remind him that none of these people can use concern to pay their rent, or can they eat it? So it seems to me that if we're talking about minority groups, disadvantaged groups, employment opportunities, and programs for them, I think we ought to begin to do some spring cleaning right here. When I asked about employment for minority group people here this morning, I was told, we have some. But one of the problems that arises here, and I'm speaking now about the civil service requirements, is that the examinations, the entire recruiting system of the civil service, has been designed by people who belong to a culture that we don't belong to. So it is virtually impossible for us to make anything like a decent showing on these tests. And it automatically provides a barrier to minority group people. Now, all the meetings in the world, without some action, we're getting a lot of concern, but we're not getting enough commitment. And I have to stand down there where it's hot, and the heat is on. So all I'm asking is that this group please do something. Because I have to go back to the ghetto and tell people what is happening. And I live there, and I see the pressures, and I see what is happening, and I know what is happening. So, Mr. Chairman, is there anything that you can do to allay the anxieties of these taxpayers?
Well, to ask me directly that way, Bob, you have the same concerns as we have here. And we were just hearing really something that was, seemed to me, I think, related to it. At that time, we were talking about EOC programs, and George had just raised some important questions, and we were getting some reaction. I think rather than to try to answer directly, I think you have a legitimate concern. And I think we now ought to look at that. We dropped a point there, but you have a booth here. I think we ought to get some reactions and stop this for a moment and react to your being here this way. I think you have raised some very important points. I think they're tied in with what we're doing. I agree with you. I think we ought to look at them and do something about them and involve your group, if necessary, other groups in that process.
May I make one more commitment, Chairman, is that, quite frankly, I'm getting very disillusioned with organizations who have been participating here. CIC, Mr. Chairman, I want to go on record of raising some questions of, I mean, just what CIC there, Urban League, I see represented churches, and the Board of Supervisors, Police Department, the City Council. And quite frankly, I'm saying that I'm not happy about what is happening.
I want to thank you for bringing your group in and giving us this straightforward dig. I think it's good. I think that's the process, Bob. I'm going to stop, and I saw some hands here.
Chairman, I move that this item become a necessity item on the agenda as an emergency at the present time, because I also have taken a tour through this city, and it looks like hell.
I don't think you've identified yourself sufficiently, Bob. Why don't you just tell us who you are? Most of us know, we work with you, but for the rest of you, rest of them, they may not know. It's an EOC program, et cetera, you know.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have the honor to present Bob Richardson, leadership trainee. I'm director of the leadership training program, and these are some of the people who are in the program.
Bob, could you go on just a little bit to describe what that program is? Because this group talked about it in relationship to criticism, leveled against it. And I think that many people really were not familiar with what you are trying to do by way of job training and development.
Thank you, Dan. First of all, I say that it's an old adage that if you're not being criticized, you're not doing anything worthwhile. And this is why I've come to criticize you here this morning.
We're doing it over here.
Now, our program is funded by the Office of Economic Opportunity to train 35 young people. The purpose of this program is to take people who would not normally be able to fit into sub-professional roles and career-type situations. And to put it crudely, our job is to put them on the first step of the ladder of moving into a job situation where they have a career and it's not a dead-end job.
Bob, what's your name?
Richard. Our program has basic components. One is an on-the-job training experience, and the other is an educational component. Now, how we operate is that after we recruit people, we put them through a series of tests, educational tests, to see just at what is their level of education, functional education. There are people who are below high school level, functional. There are people at high school level, and there are people who are above. Now, the next step is to design educational programs that are related to what they're doing on the job, and just not, you know, the good old book learning. Our trainees are placed in two areas primarily, and this two areas within the healthcare profession, social work and correction and teaching. And the philosophy behind the program is that if you give people an opportunity to move into professional areas, even at the sub-professional level, then they can make contributions to the operation of these agencies because they are in a position to be able to interpret rules, regulations, agency policies and procedures to the client group. And at the same time, they're also in a position to be able to interpret the feelings, the attitudes, and the solutions to problems that minority group people consider to the agency. Now, so far, we have people placed in one county agency, the Honor Camp, and Neighborhood House Association, Boys and Girls Aid Society, Children's Home Society. And we have just made some arrangements where we'll have three people placed in the welfare department in case aid. Now, what I'd like to say here is that this is a program that is designed to find solutions to one of the major problems in this city. And if I alone cannot do it, this is the responsibility of the entire city, the county board of supervisors, as well as private and public agencies have come forward and have really made fantastic contributions and have supported it. But this seems to me to be only the beginning, because where we are talking of 35 people, we should be talking in terms of a minimum, maybe 3,500. And we need to expand these programs, but it cannot be done only by the OEO. It cannot be done only by the Department of Labor. This is a concern of this entire community. And I think it is the responsibility of the community to get involved in these things, know what is going on. Have I answered your question?
I have a question. As I understand it, this is the second class
of the leadership training program. Is that correct?
It's the second class of this agency, but this is a branding program. This
now,
program is
of the first class, of the first 35 young people who went through leadership training, how many of those people are placed, are working in jobs?
I know of, well, there are 20, there's 20 actually went through.
20, are,
yes,
they, all, are they all employed?
Well, four of them, I managed to place them in college. And there are about six others that I know of that are employed. There are others who have left the state. But this is about it. And the first program was different from the present program in that it was designed primarily to train minority group people to fill some of the leadership roles in the community. While this program has it has a career focus. Now, insofar as people who come out of these programs are not employed, I think part of the criticism for this lies on the community itself, not on the people who come out of the program or the programs themselves. Because the community should realize that if we didn't have problems here, we wouldn't have programs like this. And I think business, as well as public and private agencies, should make the effort, not sit back and wait for us to come with our hats in our hands, but should make the effort to come forward and say, okay, you have these people, you're trying to break the cycle of poverty, what can we do to help?
I'd like to add one thing to what you're saying, Bob, and that has to do with what people around the table can do. Bob says this is a new program, and this is true, because what they're trying to do now is to define new kinds of socially useful jobs that people can do as aides to professional people working in health, welfare, and other kinds of agencies. One of the problems Bob has had is to get entree to city and county departments and the schools, because these programs, if they're going to be funded out of the Department of Labor, have to have some certainty that the first positions will be open, that there is a training program, and that the agency will hire the person, or there's a reasonable possibility that they will be hired after the completion of the training. And these aren't make-work programs. They're jobs that really do have to be done. But the problem that we have as an agency and that Bob has is getting the city and the county and other public institutions to make it possible for these young people to have an opportunity to be trained. And that means there has to be some sort of a commitment to the idea. This is where we need help. And this is why I said earlier in my remarks that the war on poverty is not an EOC program, it's a total community program. And to make it work, we have to have the involvement of the city and the county and the various departments, as well as the private sector.
Mr. John, this is where we got off last week on this whole thing. The responsible people for executing the war on poverty program in this particular area is out of the hands of the power structure delegated to the EOC. And as a result, you do not have the interest of the power structure. People who can do something about these same people do not have the interest because they are not in control. And this is where we got off on the personalities last week, Mr. Austin from the county and Mr. Katz. This is the problem here. All cities, there are only a few cities that are under the system that we are under. And this is the problem. And until we can change the structure, we're still going to have this lack of interest, I feel. Now, maybe we can generate some interest because we have another program that is directed by the city, which is able to secure jobs for people that are in training. So on the other hand, you have this concerned executive group who's trying to do something themselves, and the responsibility for this, for getting entree, is in the hands of the director, and as Jack Katz.
And until he can break through to the people who are able to do something about his needs, we're still going to be spinning our wheels.
This is where we were last week
on this thing here. This is what gave rise to it.
I mean,
Austin is sick or something. He's not here. So we,
all right, let me see if I can get your point clarified.
Yes.
Before we move on. You're saying that last time we took up this point a little differently, but that one of the expressions of the minority was that the reason there is no interest as perceived by them, or small interest as perceived by them, is that they are not themselves running the program. Is this essentially what you're saying? That if they were running
the
it...
The pronoun they, you referring to who now?
The power structures.
Yes, that's it, that's it.
All right, we have your point there then. I saw a hand back there. Did I see you?
About four times, yes.
Right.
I'd like to comment on this and bring out a few points that maybe hasn't been brought out, and I think that the purposes of this particular program are very noble. And the purposes of this program, as I see it, was to search out in the minority groups the leadership in this program and to find people who have the capability of leadership and training in this field. Now, I think this is a noble idea, as most of the anti-poverty programs are, but the question comes about as to how it's progressing and what is the end results. Now, this is the thing that we're interested in. The budget, I believe, is, can you tell me, Bob, $286 million? I guess you're used to the big figures.
Budget-wise, I'm receiving $162,000 from the BWP, the Bureau of Work Program, and from the EOC, possibly $36,000.
Well, this has been trimmed down from what it was.
No, my program was refunded at the identical level as last year.
The total budget is how much?
The total budget is about, I think, $256,000.
It involves 35 people.
Yeah, but what we have to understand is that when we're talking about cost per person, we have to talk only in terms of the cost, the cash cost. Because, for example, I give a fantastic amount of time to the program that I'm not paid for. The people who work in the program themselves also give a fantastic amount of time to developing the program.
You get $11,000.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Now, the county, and now you say nobody's responding to this. The county responded to you and said, we'll work with you and put your people to work.
No, this is not, I think you misunderstood, Nadir. I distinctly said that the county has responded.
Yes.
And that I'm actually involved right now with two county agencies. But what I did not say that the county has not responded. But what I'd like to do now is say that I am hoping that the county will respond still further in terms of creating entry-level positions for people who come through this program.
Your program is geared to welfare and these types of programs.
No, I think there's a misunderstanding.
Well, then I'm misunderstood in the material that's put out that the people who are going to be come out of your program are going to seek employment in this type of field.
No, the program has really a double focus, working not only with the people in the program, but at the same time, we're also trying desperately to open entry-level positions in the civil service, county, city, as well as private and other public agencies. And you see, this is where we need, this is one of the areas in which we badly need the support of both the city government as well as the county government, that after we have trained these people, when they can qualify for entry-level positions, then we need to begin to think, Mr. Dent, in terms of widening the employment market. I mean, creating new entry-level jobs. And I can give you some specific examples here, where, for example, in the welfare department, each caseworker is really badly overloaded. They're badly overworked. And they are overworked doing a lot of things that can be done by the professionals. Now, if we could divide the total job load of each caseworker, this would give, it would do two things, three things. It would create the opportunity to develop a new entry-level position as the social work aide. This would take a lot of the sort of dumb work off the social worker. At the same time, it would give the social workers the opportunity to deliver a much higher level service to the client. Because I don't think there is anybody here now who would sort of dare to disagree with me that social workers in the Department of Public Welfare are not really in a position now to deliver all the services that they can to their clients. Now, if social workers cannot deliver the level of service to the clients that can move them off welfare, what we'll have is eventually a very stabilized welfare law that we'll never be able to move.
Nothing stabilized in welfare, I'll guarantee you that.
Mr. Chairman, could I beg to the dialogue? I want to know what this particular program now that's in existence was written for, what purpose? What are they doing there? What are they training people for? Mr. Dent said that the county has agreed to give some help, and I understand that, from the introductory remarks, that there will be 35 people trained without any jobs. There's no jobs for them. And I want to know what are they training the people for? What is the program written for? What is the right program for?
May I respond, Mr. Chairman? May I comment here? I'm going back to the original discussion. This was before Mr. Richards became a part of the leadership training program. Its previous director was Hal Brown. The leadership training program was designed to educate and to develop young black leaders in the black community to lead black people out of the oppression which they were under, meaning whatever means necessary, by shopping, by economics, by education, whatever means. Now, this was the original intent. It meant that if someone was discriminating in employment, they would actually gear young black people how to help people, to teach them how to eliminate that discrimination, how they were being discriminated against. For an example, give them encouragement to go to their supervisor to react to what he was doing to them. It was to go into the community to teach black people how to register to vote, teach black mothers how to go shop, how to take care of their families. It was a service, a leadership role which whites could not do through the Department of Welfare because they cannot gain the confidence of the black people who needed help. Now, this was the original concept of the leadership training program. It was not to detrain people to go somewhere and prepare themselves to work for the county, the Department of Welfare, the city of San Diego. It was to develop black leaders in the community so that they could help other persons to help themselves. It was a self-help through neighborhood leadership, and that's why the title is what it is. But you see, this is what I was speaking of when they came in about attitudes. You see, we must work in such a way as the way the power structure will accept what we're doing. Now, it was conceived by the power structure that this organization was creating black militants, black nationalists. So you had to rewrite the program to bring in a concept of a new careers concept, you see. So it looks like it's something of value as it looks through the eyes of a white man. So they have lost the original concept to help black people, and now all they're doing is trying to get into a white labor market. And you see, this is what I mean about white people, and when I responded to your question about why aren't the people who are in the programs writing the programs themselves, and you said, aren't they doing it? I said, yes, you're doing it, but they're writing to fit the job description that's in the mind of white people, and it's still bad. And that's why the black people who are placed in positions today are not helping other black people, because when they get there, their mind become like white people.
Let me find out if that answers the question that was raised first.
No, it didn't, because I'm still wondering, where are you going to receive the compensation? This is what I'm saying. What category was the person going to train a mother how to shop? This is what I'm saying now. If you're training people for specific functions in a community, where will the compensation come from? From the community or from some group that will open up the door and hire somebody? This is what I'm saying. See, it's all right to train people. You have 50 people trained.
to train other Negroes to be something, but who's going to pay them?
Well, you're asking two questions then. Your first question was, what was the purpose of the program? Now you're asking, after the purpose has been fulfilled, and the men and women are now ready to move out, who is going to absorb them?
That was my only question.
So you're asking two questions.
No, it's the same question. After they're trained, what are you going to do with them?
Right.
And this is what I think Bob was saying.
Right.
According to what Mr. Dent said, that the county has already opened up that doors to hire people. Now, I don't know what they're saying now.
Was your first question answered? The purpose of the leadership training, its establishment, was that answered?
Yes, I understand that.
All right, George, would you accept, you used the word black only. Was the leadership training designed only to train black leaders?
I should have used the word minority because there are Mexican-Americans also in the program.
I just wanted to
do the same thing in the Mexican-American community.
Just modifying that one. I saw a hand in the back.
There's a hand behind you.
Oh, one back here, too, and one over here. Let's get into one in the back first and then immediately start right here.
Well, I think we should take the spirit of what is happening today and not just that. I think the fact that the trainees are here in a dialogue group today is perhaps the most important thing that has ever happened to this dialogue group. The fact that the same group you might see out at a Black Power rally at Balboa Park, and that you also would see them down here sitting with the City Community Dialogue Group, I reiterate, is the most important thing that could happen. Now, I don't know how long this atmosphere might prevail. I think that's probably up to the Dialogue Group to determine through action how long this type of atmosphere will prevail. The second thing that I think is important is exactly what Bob came in and said today. They have gone through the city building, and they have found very few black people employed. These people are leadership trainees. When they come out of the program, where are they going to work? They survey the place that we have heard it said should be in a position of cooperation with the Economic Opportunity Commission, and I will take exception to that and say that they must be in a position of leadership, not cooperation. For if our city isn't in a position of leadership, if our county, if all our facilities aren't in a position of leadership in providing these opportunities, private industry and private business simply are not going to do anything. Part of the program leadership trainees go through is one of becoming acquainted with different government agencies. Now, is a perception that I have to say that I felt today when this group came in, the environment, the atmosphere of this group changed. I can't say how I felt. I felt that there was a more, maybe less acceptable or what are they doing here type attitude that I felt. And this same attitude was given to me when the group of leadership trainees went through the county probation department, and the training officer there, I talked with him, and he said, you know what happened when that group of black people came through the county probation department? People came to me and said they were scared. Should we let them in? The secretary even wanted to know if it was all right if she let them use the restroom. Now, I asked him what he said. And he said he even had to hesitate to know how to answer the secretary. And then he had the perception to say then he realized what the problem really was. Now, I could accept that on the surface, but he hasn't realized what the problem really was because we have not even been able to get a representative from the probation department who've been repeatedly invited to these meetings. We talked to the probation department about the summertime program. The fact that hundreds of youth who have never been reached before were reached through Teen Host Number One, a group of people that perhaps would have been instigators or followers in any social disruptive activity that could have come about during the summertime. I attribute that success of that program directly to those young black leaders who took the incentive and the initiative to make that program go at what I determined as summertime coordinator to be an investment of about 95 cents per head throughout the summertime. Now, this is the kind of investment we're talking about. We should have immediately seen, either through the probation department or through the city or through a private agency, that here is something happening. They should have taken those leaders who started that team post number one and said, here is a salary, $400 a month, $500 a month. Here is a program budget, $300 or $400 a month, whatever it takes. Run that program. Of course there has to be some kind of administrative proficiency in this type thing. But you say, what kind of jobs to place them in? Now you've taken one leader of team post after another, place them out in the county in different communities, which I think are white-oriented as part of the system, and there is no leadership there. Now, the kids, out of their own interest, continue this, and I think you've missed a beautiful opportunity to make use of a developing talent, maybe in a wholly new field than we're used to. It's hard to do things that we're not used to, but we must deal with the attitude. When they go through the city and say, I don't see me there and I'm getting prepared, and where am I going to work? If I don't see me now, why even get prepared to work? Maybe get prepared for something else to create the conditions that will allow me to work. If we can't deal with those attitudes that are present, if we can't recognize their presence, and if they come to work, can they use the restroom comfortably? Then I think that the whole message of the dialogue is lost. I think the whole message of what these trainees have to tell us is lost, and I think that we have no one to blame but ourselves.
We'll start over here.
I saw some hands here.
I just want to say that I'm a part of leadership training, and soon down the end, the paper was asking exactly what is being done. Well, through my 3 months of training, I found out one thing, awareness that there was a problem. Now, I placed out the Boys and Girls AIDS Society, and I found out there was really a need for me. Out of approximately 50 children out there, there was only 2 Negroes. And the welfare, I work as a case aide to the welfare worker out there. And I am the only one who am able to help this one Negro girl. Now, the case aide, the case worker, was a highly educated woman. 6 or 7 years of book learning. Through this training program, I am able to help her. And what I see the problem now around the people here is ignorance. You ask a question, why? You ask a question about this program when all you have to do is go down Imperial and find out for yourself what's being done. But you sit on your tails and ask, what is going on? And this is a problem. It's ignorance. It takes more than just reading about something to know how something works. It takes actually going down and finding out. And it is your responsibility to find out what is going on.
Beautiful.
You say, what is going on? I get sick of hearing that, you know. I look around here, I see people. I see Mr. Del Campo. I had him as a math teacher. He told me that if I learn math, you know, I'll do so and so. I accomplished math. After I accomplished this math, I got a high school diploma, came down, applied for a job. I wasn't qualified. And this is, I'm not knocking him, but this is I got to school. But now, after I went through this 3 months of training, I have a possibility of getting on full time. This wasn't just book learning. This program has made me aware that there is a problem because I didn't realize there was a problem. And until you people, and I use the word you people, till you people get off your tails and go down and find out what the problem is or what we actually are doing,
Well, you know, we could be ready to riot. And then you just, you hear rumors and say, oh, they're going to riot down there. This is secondhand information. If you were down there yourself finding out exactly what was going on, you wouldn't rely on secondhand information. It's no excuse for you to say, what is the program about? You should know.
Mr. Chairman, I assume she was talking to me. I think she misinterpreted. It's a matter of semantics. I don't think she understood what I said.
I
understand what she's talking about, because I'm down there with them, wherever she's talking about.
She wasn't speaking with you, Larry.
Albert Heiser.
What's your Swahili name?
Traditional name is Kazi.
Right.
I work at West Fork Honor Camp Correctional Officer. That's the title of the game. Last year, the thing came up with the teen folks. I remember we talked to the mayor a number of times, and we're still talking to him. But we had the same people here started the teen folks, the same people here started the Citizens Patrol, Citizens Against Police Brutality. The police department didn't want to endorse the CP, but they endorsed the team folks, the same people, you know. But we were militant over here. But we were okay over here because we were going to do something. When we were doing something for black people with the CP, I feel like the problem is known, you know. I feel like it's known. Everybody in here knows what the problem is. People need jobs, you know. Black people need jobs. They need to be treated better when they come down to places like this. I didn't appreciate when I was downstairs looking for my boss and the rest of the people, one of these white women to come up to me and say, it's a bunch downstairs. Are you looking for them? And I said, a bunch of what? The people. You know, I heard them talking about they was waiting. So this is how we found them. I don't appreciate that, you know. We have a very bad problem with police patrolmen in our area. You know, we bring it to people. We tell them what it is, you know. We tell them, but still, we're that militant force. So whatever they say, you know, is, they're just making a bunch of noise because they're mad. And they don't realize that the whole community is mad. They just haven't woke up yet. And then they're in the process of waking up, because if things don't go better, and what's happening right now, things aren't going any better than it was last summer, you know, when all the promises started happening again. And now there's promises, you know, there's a whole lot of promises. There's one swimming pool, at the Y, you know, and if everybody thinks that's going to do, you got another thought, you know. These officials are going to have to start doing something, and they know what to do.
I know, Walter Kimball, traditional name, Dumu. I know there is a thing, one thing that bugs me, and I think this gentleman over here, the one that kind of put it out to me first, I could hear it, is that people are always asking, you know, about programs and end results of programs and what is this program going to do. Now, anybody that goes through any ghetto in any major city can look at what the programs that existed have done, you know. And I think if this can exist, if the people that are in these salary positions in, say, civic officials and things, if they can be paid to create that type of a situation, I think we could be paid to do the things that we are doing. And I think more positions should be opened up. And the thing that bugs me also is the fact that white people sometimes, pretty soon, are going to start accepting the leadership of black people. That's all there is to it. I think we have followed your leadership for 450 years. I think it's only time that you start following our leadership. I think we have something to say. I think we have the direction in which to give you. And I think it's time that you, you know, take heed.
All right, Harold Knight, Society Keeps the Traditional Name. I'd like to say one thing. I find myself in a rare position being up at the honor camp, too. Like, this is supposed to be a training thing to train us. Now, maybe most of us might get a job, but what about the rest of the people? And San Diego is in a rare position itself. It's the only city of its size that hasn't had any disturbance that wasn't caused by a police department. You haven't had a riot here. You haven't had nothing but some police going around pushing people around. You're in a position now to stop it. So do something about it.
I think what Rosemary said, and what
group of trainees have said have pointed out two things very clearly. And it seems to me that the fundamental problem we're dealing with is that this is a racist society. This is a society in which people have been taught from the cradle up that minority group people are inferior. And as long as we have this built into the socialization process of the majority of the people, people are going to think we're inferior. Now, for example, there have been quite a lot of questions in this community about my salary. And I don't know if the question that has been asked is not sort of related to the fact that people just don't think a black man should earn a decent living. Now, I happen to be reasonably well qualified. And as far as I'm concerned, the salary that I'm working at now, I could earn more. But I'm doing what I like to do. I'm doing what I want to do. Now, two things have come out. This side of the room have been talking at a gut level. That side of the room have been talking at an intellectual level. Now, when we have to deal with problems that are the direct result of racism, direct result of groups of people feeling that other groups are inferior, then we can no longer intellectualize about it. Because this is problems that are generated by racism are problems that highlight the irrationality of human beings. And when we talk about a nice logical level, all we're doing is evading the question. I think we have to begin to do some gut reaction to what is happening in this town, what is happening in this community. And this is all that we're trying to say.
Grant? Well, I don't know, Carol, what forces were operative to bring the kind of meeting that we've had today in the dialogues, but I personally finally feel some sense of relief that many of the things which I have been very much personally aware of over the last 2 years is taking place in the community, down at Memorial, on Imperial, and even with the police department at times, and even with the mayor at times, down there. But finally, it's down here. And this is where it should have been all the way along. In a way, we've been talking to some intermediaries of what the problem is, and the problem is finally here. And it seems to me that we have to take this opportunity at this time to not any longer say, well, we can't do it overnight. The question is, when can we do it? And to set down for these people so they can look right ahead, and for us too, to look right ahead and say, here's what will be 6 months from now, 12 months from now, 18 months from now, and 2 years from now, that problem won't exist here at all. We won't have that problem here in San Diego, because 2 years from now, it will be gone. That's not overnight. That's 700 and some days from now, and I think we can do it. And the most hopeful thing is that they're still hoping that it can be done. They're here right now asking us and insisting, and they should insist, and we should have been insisting all along. So what I am saying is, I think we have, from this point on, this is January, the beginning of a new year, to set out month by month by month so that we can look ahead and they can look ahead as to where we're going and what the timetable is, and it's got to include them. They know. They really do know. And we've got to use their expertise in knowing about it, and we can't dissipate it. Albert is a rare guy, believe me. And to me, it is a crime that we take a rare guy like this with a rare talent and ship him out to do an ordinary kind of job. He's an extraordinary person who we should be paying a good salary to do an extraordinary job that there's nobody else, as far as I know, can do it.
If we didn't do it, many would starve. And that is the basic point. I have to take people, and this is what really infuriates me, I have to take people who could make a much more vital contribution right there in the ghetto.
Right.
But I got to look forward to the time when the guy's kids are going to be hungry.
Mr. Chairman, this is what I've been saying all the time since the start of this dialogue. We invited all of these city officials in, people in responsible positions that could do something about our problems. We voted here two or three times that all we would do would be to air the problem and no action taken. This is what we said we were going to do. We're going to bring about an awareness of the problem and then let everybody that could do something about it change his own heart, and eventually something would happen. This is what we're saying. Now, I don't know what direction we're going in now. The problem is here before us. We have people here that can make jobs for anyone that they want to make jobs for.
might take a little finagling, but when you are in charge of something, you can do what you want to do with it. Now, where are we going from here? I'll restate my previous question, that who is responsible for placing these jobs? Who will the leadership training head contact to get five people employed? This is what I asked at first. If you train them for what? What are you training them for? If you train them to be whatever they are, then where are you going to get them employed? And this is what they are saying. And this is my question. All
right?
Mr. Chairman, and this is the problem. His question is the problem. The problem is that the trainees who are now training with the county, who are now training with the city, will most likely not get a job with those two agencies because, for one, with the cultural bias, they probably won't pass the test. Secondly, the test is one that is not designed for black people to pass because of the cultural difference between the person who wrote the test and the person who's going to take it within the black community. Secondly, is with the county, jobs now has some 99 black people and Mexican Americans who are now training with the county of San Diego and county, I believe, is also city jobs. They will not be able to get jobs at the county and the city because they too will flunk the test. They will flunk the test because of cultural bias in that examination. Now you say to a brother, you say, well, why can't he bring up his qualifications like the white boys bring up their qualifications? I say this way. A man does not have to take a written examination to show that he qualifies to drive a forklift. There are fools who are driving up down the highway and also normal people at 65 miles an hour every day that can't read and write and they all have driver's license. How did they pass the test to get them? They got those licenses. So people can also pass a oral examination for the city and for the county of San Diego. And as long as those tests are written by a white person, it will automatically be cultural bias except for the question 1, 2, and 2 is 4 as it relates to black people. So the problem is right here today is that this city service, you go to the city of San Diego, they say we can't do nothing about it because the Civil Service Commission has set up the examination that way. That's a complete lie because the Civil Service Commission is a part of the system just like the man I was talking to, and they all work together. This is the power structure which we speak to. The examination system has to be changed. Qualifications is not for a level that I've got to come up to. You see, because Bob Richards and the black people here, they're already qualified. You see, but they're not qualified by the eyes the way you look at them qualified. Now, why must I become white before I can be qualified? Why must I have to change my color and the color of my eyes before I'm then qualified? An examination system, it is not qualification. We're not going to discuss qualification. We're going to discuss what created the situation that left black people out. And Tom Johnson calls it the question before the question. And that's where we are today. Let's get back to the question before the question and change this examination system because this city will always be discriminating if the examination system remains the same as it is. The county will always be discriminating if the system remains the same. You've got to change this system. And the white people can change that system.
I want to speak at this time because the way our conversation is going, you would think that most of the programs are failures and that people don't get jobs. I want to point to a program which I have looked upon. It's an anti-poverty program. I've praised it to the sky. I think it's one of the finest things that ever hit our country. And I'm speaking of the one known as Title V, which accomplished something. They took, and if I had known this was going to talk on anti-poverty, I'd have brought some material along with me, so I'll just have to grab some figures out of my head. We're in the present time, I believe, the third period. These are 6 months period of training of people. Through the adult education program of the school, and through the welfare department, he chose, these are figures I can't give exact, but something like 300 people. These 300 people were taken for 3 months and given basic training, arithmetic, language barriers, and other things of this kind for 3 months. And then they were placed in the hospitals throughout our community for on-job training. Before they graduated, out of the 300, 225 of them had jobs. And I think this is what we're talking about, is jobs. Now, these people had jobs, and I've checked back since, and they still have jobs. There have been a few changes. Now, in the next group that went through, they didn't get twice as many jobs, about the same number of people, because of Medicare, which had cut down the number of people in the hospitals. But these people have jobs, and these people are black people and white people and all kinds of people. Every one of them were on welfare.
But today
they
was a dead end job.
Today they're working. And this is the thing I think we're talking about.
Mr. Chairman, we're not going for any more domestic jobs. Those people are sweeping floors at these hospitals.
Okay.
We're not going for that anymore. No, that is a dead-end job because they were making more money on the welfare than they are making there at the hospital. They're making $1.35 an hour. She can live better by staying on the welfare. She's a fool for going to work at the county hospital for less.
Right.
You see, that's not a that's not progression, that's regression. We're not going for this bit. Story in the cafeteria work up here is very successful in the Fair Practice Training Council, placing black people, white people, and Mexican people. But they're washing dishes. They're sweeping floors. That is not success, and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about an association whereby these young black people can become the head of the welfare department one day, or the head of this white police department one day, not as head of the domestic department at the county hospital.
Over here.
My name is Richard Smiley, Commissioner of Energy and Jobs. I went down to the employment office, and they had this program for Virginia City College for 3 months, and they give you a job. To get into the program, you have to be a high school dropout. You got to quit school and get a job.
All right, I think a lot of things have been said, and I'd only like to take a minute out and try to pinpoint, pull out two or three things that I think that we'll have to come to grips with. I think it's time that we do. And I'll stop and see if we can begin to lay out how we're going to come to grips with it. Number one, we've had a very unusual experience this morning of hearing people. The very people we've been talking about on a higher level, or whatever you want to call it, they're here. We've heard from them. They've been eloquent. They've told us from the gut level, from the nitty-gritty level, exactly how they feel, what they feel, and what we ought to be doing about it. They've leveled some very criticism, disturbing criticism, at the city, the county, other public officials. I think that's important. Regardless of the tone said and so forth, it tells exactly what they're feeling and what their message is. The tone of the voices, the emotions, the anger, all of that is the problem. That is part of it. And we should accept it all as trying to tell us something, give us a message. The other thing I heard was that we have people who, for one reason or other, probably would have been justified in losing the faith. But as pointed out, they still have the faith, and still have faith that something can be done. I think that's important. For as was pointed out by one of them, we've not had any major riot here. We haven't had a riot at all. And he's saying to us that we have time yet to do something about it. I heard also back that way that we still have a problem, as reiterated up here too, that we have to come to grips with what we're going to do with these young people. We're spending our money to train them. And if only 10 have been placed out of the first group and the others became discouraged and left, we have another problem. We ought to do something about it. That's enough from me. I want to hear, where do we go from here? No, that isn't all from me. We were talking about another specific program at first. I think all this now ties in with Jack's warning and his feelings about the urgency. Maybe we don't have enough time. George was speaking when they came in. I think all of this really is part of the same deal. I'll stop and see, where do we go from here? I should like to hear some reactions from the public officials here, see what some of the reactions are, aside from Mr. Dennis.
Well, Mike has out.
All right, Mike.
I'll talk into you.
Well, we've had a very favorable turnout of public officials this morning. We've had four members of the city council, Councilman Hitch, Councilman Morrow, myself, and mayor have been here, and Mr. Dan on the Board of Supervisors, I'm glad to see him. I know the board has not been represented at some of the other meetings, and Mr. Keller has asked them to have somebody here. We're not in a position to just press our button on the desk and create a bunch of jobs. We're not, as an individual, we're not in command of the situation. As an individual, we have very little command over it, but when we get together and make up a decision, we have all power, and I think that we're going to be talking about it. We have two of the most influential, respected people of police work here, the Inspector Gore of the Police Department, Mr. Collender, who are in charge of training and community relations work, and I think they're going to be meeting with the mayor and council and talking about some of these things. I found the gut reaction end of the table to be very educational to me, and I appreciate that so many of the visitors have gotten up and spoke their piece, and also I thought Rosemary's talk on the other end of the table was very educational. I've learned quite a bit from the meeting today. I was out of town, as you know, the last couple of meetings. I regret I wasn't able to come along there, but the subject we're in right now isn't something that we've been continuing along, particularly for the last couple of weeks. It's something that was an urgency matter on the table today, and I got it from the start to where we are now. So there's going to be a lot of talking done after this meeting ends on these subjects, and I think there's going to be some more progress. I don't think that next summer is going to be as bleak as the start of last summer was. I think progress was made last summer. I think there's more than just a swimming pool at the YMCA. I think you're going to see a lot of progress available for the start of summer 68.
Carol, did we get out of the public yet?
Yeah, I'd like to kind of respond to what Mike is saying. I have no doubt that many of the public officials around this table have an awareness of the problem, but it's always been a kind of an abstraction. You know, it's about we ought to do something, but I don't think that they get the, or I don't know, but I don't feel that they have the sense of urgency that the people who get, who are close to it have or sense. Now, I'm pretty far removed myself from this, but I get enough going and enough information to know that things really aren't that good, you know, where it is. And yet it's a very difficult thing to communicate this sense of urgency, because there are programs that are going. But I have the distinct impression that we are not doing enough, and we're not doing it fast enough. And I think that the people we've heard from this morning have said this better than I can say it or anybody on my staff can say it. And Glenn's point about laying out a program, having some goals that are realizable and attainable, is, I think, awfully important. Because unless there is a program in which the total community is involved and there is the kind of leadership from our public officials, and there is the kind of involvement of business and industry, we're not going to do this job, because it can't be done by any single agency. It has to be a community attack on the problem, and up till this point, I've not seen this. And I think that all of us have recognized it. There has to be a lot more done, a lot faster, and there has to be a program laid out. Now, the people who are in the position to take this kind of leadership are the mayor's office, the board of supervisors, in conjunction with the state and federal officials, because there are resources at the federal level that we haven't tapped yet. They're hard to get, but we have to have a program first before we can even ask for the kind of help that would be available. Now, what's happened in other communities, program is often, has usually followed riots or disturbances, and that's the wrong way to approach it. I think if we started with the program, I think we could probably sell both private enterprise and the federal government on the assumption that with all of us working together, we could do something that hasn't been done very successfully anywhere, but we could start here. But the start has to be from the public officials.
I see any other public officials. I see some other hands, but maybe some of the other public officials want to respond at this time. Any?
Carol?
Yes.
What I have to say is a personal opinion. I am a councilman, but I'm a citizen and a taxpayer, and a father, I might add. And I noticed in what George Stevens had to say
that he indicated that people should not start at the bottom sometimes. I'd like to mention to you that we have a shortage of jobs. It would be great if we could employ all of the people of the city, regardless of race or their color or what religion they are. But people, when they go through the leadership training, such as these young people are going through, and I congratulate them for that, then it comes to a point of taking a job. Now, I have found in all the time that I've been alive and applied for a job that no one wished to start me as the president of the organization. I had to start at the bottom and gradually work up based on what I produced for the company in which I was working for. And so I would be very delighted as one individual, and I have placed some people from minority groups on jobs, and I can give you the example of where that was. You've heard of the organization called Handyman, which is a private enterprise. Handyman, the owner of that business, called me one day and he said, "Alan, would you please get me 5 employees of a minority group?" So, knowing a friend among minority groups, I called that friend and he located for me 5 people who he thought was qualified for those particular jobs, and they went out there and they got the jobs. But they didn't start running Handyman, or they didn't become a department manager on that time in going out there. They started, George, at $1.35 an hour, and they were tickled to death to get it. They were. And there were, you can laugh if you wish, but I thought we were here to exchange ideas, and that anyone was allowed to say what they wished. That was the purpose for which I was invited here. And so I think that the leadership class is fine, and I think Mr. Richards is doing a good job, but he also, I think, has the responsibility to teach the people who he trains, or if I were training a group of people, that you start at the bottom, particularly if you're young, and you increase in value to that company, and they pay you more. And so I would suggest that any of our white people in our community, and any of our black people, and any of our Spanish American people, particularly the young ones, be willing to start at the bottom, make themselves more valuable to the company or the public agency for which they work, and they will be compensated and moved up every time they're entitled to an increase.
Let me take the prerogative to do what everyone wants to do, and then move it. Some of you are probably wondering why all the reaction. I could have predicted that the room would go up in smoke. Alan, I will do this as the chair to say that your remarks indicate, from a perceptual standpoint, from the black and the brown, that is precisely the problem. And this is not against you personally, but what you said is precisely what would arouse the very reactions that we're here to talk about. Now, we don't have time to go back and do it word by word. What they are reacting to now, so you'll fully understand what they're reacting to now, are the implications of what you say in terms of the stereotypes and the myths about the blacks and the browns. So that you'll understand, that's why they're reacting to it.
And maybe privately sometimes we can knock it about when you and I have
well, that's the same problem a white person has.
No, this is not the problem they're reacting to. So all I'm going to take a crack at you is what I'm saying. And we'll have time. It will be educational, I'm sure.
Yeah, mine wasn't personal, Cal. It wasn't a personal reaction.
I know, but I didn't want to get to that. I wanted to go back to the hand that was up, George. I'm with you, but let's keep it moving. Matt's hand was up, and then over here. All I'm saying is that what you said indicates that we have a problem as perceived by all the minorities here, and many of the majority, and they were ready to take a poke at you, but we'll let Max start.
No, I'm not going to take any poke. As a matter of fact, I don't think any purpose can be said right. in pointing out the difference in a dead-end job and a beginning job. I spent 20 years trying to teach that as a waste of time. Mm-hmm. What I like to do is to try to get this group to, I know we don't make recommendations, but could we somehow get before those who are responsible for the entrance examination, the fact that sometimes the examination is not relevant to the skills necessary for the job, and that could we ask that examinations be re-evaluated, because it is these examinations that are systematically keeping many of our people from employment. So if this group could just say that the entrance examination, the entrance requirements for jobs should be re-looked at, then I think we could be doing something positive.
As a specific thing on the floor, but before we get other reactions, what about what you said? You said that...
Yes, I take the same position, Mr. Chairman, is that the civil service examinations are... you have an overall examination. You pass the examination, and when they hire you, they might send you down as a candidate. But you take the same examination, and they're going to put you in office.
No, that is not what he's saying. He has asked us a specific thing about a concept that George has put on the table first, and it's been talked about, and let's work at it. The concept is, should this group have reaction to his specific suggestion that entrance exams be re-evaluated to the end that the requirements as stated there, or the qualifications if you wish, are more relevant to the performance of that particular job. That's different from what you were saying. Am I right, Matt?
Yes, you're right. I was just saying that the examination in George Stevens' words, examinations traditionally measure how efficient you are in the middle class American culture. Most of our people are not, because they're not a part of that culture. But they can do the job, so that we should be looking toward establishing new ways of measuring capabilities that do not measure middle class white culture.
All right, now let's talk to that, please, the mayor.
I think that you've touched on the key, probably, to something that's disturbed me for a long time and still does.
And louder than getting in the background.
Something that has disturbed me for a long time and still does. Technically, I am a member of civil service, not of this city, but I still hold civil service status in another institution. And so I have been through the process. And one of the things that's always bugged me about the civil service system has been the arbitrary requirements for certification, for instance, for a specific job. I don't hold a certificate, so it would bug me, and I think that's probably true of these young people here. I've always thought that built into the system, civil service system, should be a provision for the substitute of, whether it be work experiences, certification, whatever it might be, some kind of a way to apply other qualifications or other standards for the arbitrary standards that are requested in most examinations. And I think the question that's been raised in the back here is a good one. Unfortunately, we have already talked about this to our own civil service commission. We talked to a representative from State College almost a year ago in relation to the use of the psychology department to attempt to develop some kind of a new concept about examination. this is not typical only of the minority community, black or brown. It's also typical of the average white person, that an examination of the kind that is normally given by civil service scares the living jeebers out of them and they flunk them. Now, just looking at a piece of paper and trying to put marks on it scares most people to death. I find it a game, but most people don't. And even if they're qualified, they goof it because of the apprehension of sitting down on paper. There must be, and I'm sure that sooner or later we're going to find the answer to this, there must be a way of grading people's capabilities and their opportunities by another method other than putting it down on the kind of charts that you say are designed by the white culture. And this is basically true, because they're created out of the minds of the people who designed these, and they basically are the white people. But there must be other ways. And I think that I agree that this dialogue session is not a place in which we take specific actions and recommendations and put them into force, because we would defeat the purpose of the dialogue itself. But as a result of what has been said here, I shall and I will call together some of the people who are responsible in these areas of job classification, and let's sit down with the manpower coordinator that we were just putting in operation this week, with the members of our own civil service staff and the commission and the county as well, that they'll participate and sit down and discuss this round robin problem of how do you accomplish exactly what has been suggested. Because I think there are methods that can do this. And I'm not thinking just in terms of the black or brown community. I'm thinking in terms of everybody who needs an opportunity. And there are doors closed on the average person who comes to qualify for civil service because of some of the problems built into the system. And this is no criticism of the system other than from time to time, and as ideas and modes and conditions change, the system has got to change. And I think that you pointed out some real necessities for system changes that are applicable primarily to the minority community in its application. And I think this can be done, and I'm sure we can make some accomplishments here. And following the suggestion from the gentleman in the corner, Mac, we will get at this immediately with some of the people who are in a position of helping us to decide what are some of the real stumbling blocks in the system. I don't quite agree that all of the jobs, for instance, are dead-end jobs. Now, I can't quite buy that assumption. Anybody, for instance, coming in as a lowly laborer, I guess that's the lowest. No, it is. And a groundskeeper, I think, is the lowest job classification we have in the city. There is nothing to preclude that individual from working his way up to be the head of the park department or the city manager for them. And I know it's unattainable to most of us, and probably will be, but there is the possibility. It is not a dead-end job. What we need to do, and what we are doing under our present system in city government at the present time, is to take people who are on a job once they're in. Now, this is getting in is a difficult problem to some, but getting in once they're in, we do prescribe certain opportunities for these people to continue to advance themselves up through the system by making credits available to them, for attending classes, by doing a whole lot of things that give them an opportunity to progress. We would be stupid if we didn't do this. And I'm not talking about any one class of people, I'm talking about the whole system. It would be absolutely asinine if we tried to keep the lid down on the labor and say, you can only be a laborer, and a mechanic, you can only be a mechanic, and an architect, you can only be an architect. If we did this, we'd stifle the very benefits that a system of this kind gives. Now, I know that there are some inhibitions in the system. I know that there are a lot of prejudices. And these prejudices extend to more than just color. But the fact remains that the system does, if we want to make it work, does provide for these kind of advancements. And we can use it. And we can make it work. One of the big stumbling blocks in the beginning is getting into the system, and I think this is where we pick up from this suggestion back here from Mac, and attempt to immediately to sit down and review the possibilities of making some changes, maybe a strictly oral examination for entering positions in civil service, particularly in the age classification, can be accomplished. And this takes no major change. We don't have to get approval of Congress. This is something we can do right here. But I think we should sit down with the people who are responsible for, first, for the system, and those who have criticism of or suggestions for change, and sit down and see if we can't come up with some of the answers. It can be done.
All right, we have... George,
yes,
and then over here.
This is just the statistical information 3 months ago about supposedly dead-end jobs, which is very significant. I addressed this partly to Mr. Hitz's response, but only as statistical facts. It's a statistical fact that the average income is $3,000 more for the white high school dropout than it is for the black high school graduate. That's a statistical information. Now, secondly, is on the dead-end jobs. A maid in any hospital you call in the city, she does not get promoted to a nurse's aide. A nurse's aide does not get promoted to an LVN. An LVN does not get promoted to an RN. That's a dead-end job, if you understand what I meant. There is no promotional aspect, if you follow me, in that system.
George,
that's what I meant.
That's not true.
No. You cannot...
Wait a second.
Okay.
Let me get back and ask this. Can't a person who is a nurse's aide complete the requirements for an RN and become an RN?
We're speaking of promotions, Bill.
Not
by promotion. No, they can't. It is complete an educational process. You do not get promoted.
Private conversation. You can follow what George is saying.
And thirdly, may I finish the third thing, Mr. Chairman? Here, I'm sorry that our people are so unaware of what takes place in their own system. Thirdly, is the civil service testing, and as the mayor spoke, which I'm very pleased at his comments that he made on this, because this significantly is the problem. But with them, that revamping, if it comes to that, after they review this with the people who are concerned, the civil service people, if it comes to a decision where they will consider revamping the testing procedure, that when they call in persons of different cultures, which must be necessary in order to revise this in a way that would not be cultural bias, is that they will not take individuals in the black community or the Mexican-American community, Chinese, Filipino community, who have the same cultural attitude as they have and try to revamp that system. If they do that, Mr. Chairman, then we will be right back with the same system they have today. And today, this is a complete mistake that the power structure makes. They tend to choose the black man who they want to represent them best to come down and work with us. That is not the best man to work with us, Mr. Chairman. It is a black man of the black man's choosing who can best communicate with him.
All right. Calvin,
I was going to say, in regards to the civil service, the effect, if something like this is going to affect, where consultation between the various groups is started, the effect would be great throughout the rest of the community. In the private sector, they will also revamp or think more about their hiring practices and departments.
Third, I saw a hand over here. Did you have a hand, sir?
Yeah, I've had it up and down alternately because my thoughts have been coming.
You're not quite stable yet with them, huh?
Well, yes, I am. They're quite numerous. But we talked about here what is possible. But so much of it, we're talking about what is technically possible and not what is realistically possible. And I think that we have to consider realistically whether these jobs, whether people have the potential. Do they really have the potential in actuality, or do we say that this is the carrot, you know, that's out there in the distance someplace? Now, George said very specifically that the black people are tired of jobs as domestics and jobs now and so forth. Now, I know that jobs now and Title V and so forth has its place, but I'm not at all certain that any of us have really looked at
giving enough versatility and enough flexibility to the concept that Bob was talking about over here earlier, new careers. How does a person, the steps, for instance, in the nursing profession, go nurse's aide, licensed vocational nurse, and registered nurse? You're starting off down here with somebody who is less than a high school graduate, and you're ending up with somebody who's got to have at least 2 years of college. Now, when that person is faced with the actuality of having to work 40 hours a week, maybe the midnight shift or the graveyard shift or something like that, as a nurse's aide, there's no possibility of that person becoming an RN, especially if she's got kids to support. So I think that we need to look for more versatility and how we can not only open up these jobs that are not dead end, but some flexibility and versatility in hours and what the working hours are and how many the working hours are, to find ways so that these people who have the very vital experience, for instance, as case aides, can become social workers and social work supervisors. I'm certain that these people, as nurses, as case aides, for instance, are going to gain a valuable experience that most of the caseworkers don't have. So how much greater caseworker would that person be who has had the experience as a case aide? So we've got to look for some versatility in these jobs, above jobs now, and above the handyman level and so forth. And I'm not at all certain that our bureaucracies are tuned in quite closely enough between our civil service and our schools and so forth as to how flexible we can become. We say, well, we've made some modifications for jobs now, people, or Title V people, to go to school for a while and to work on a job for a while. But the problem is there that these people who were on the Title V program were all family heads of families who were long-term, hardcore welfare recipients. But let's also see if we can't find some ways for making this degree of flexibility available for somebody who is not a high school dropout. So that we don't have to just talk about, there is the possibility, you know, from the fellow who starts off as the boom pusher to become president of the company. That's possible, theoretically, but realistically, it isn't. And the reality is what we've got to talk about.
What I hear every turn that it's still talking about, what really we're talking about, that is, we've got to do something about changing the systems, civil service revamping if necessary, looking at the flexibility within categories of jobs, looking at the interest. I hear you saying the same thing,
right.
Adding more to
yeah.
the urgency. Bob, and then it's already 20 of 12.
It seems to me that what we're saying here now is what you've been saying from last summer. Am I right? Now, the mayor's point was very well taken. I'm very sorry, but if here I sound slightly rude, gentlemen, I'm saying what I feel. Councilman Schaefer, I don't think you said anything to me. And quite frankly, Mr. Hitch, I think, speaking as a black man, your comment should be taken with the contempt they deserve. What we are saying, ladies and gentlemen, is that, look, we need to do something. You've been talking from us last summer until now, and I haven't seen anything come out of this dialogue. Now, I've taken this group down, and this is supposed to be an educational experience for them. And, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you understand. This is a beautiful educational experience. So all I'm saying is, please, let's talk. Well, you can talk forever if you want. But what we want to see now is a little action, no? And all the words are beautiful, but we still aren't seeing anything done. And now, Mr. Chairman, if you forgive us, I think we have to go back to work.
All right.
So thank you very much for tolerating us, ladies and gentlemen.
But I think a comment before your group leaves, I think two comments. Can you hold up just a minute? And then one of your group wants to make a comment, and we'll draw this whole thing, but we'll let you go.
Well, I just wanted to say that Mr. Richards is not just giving, you know, this particular group's perception, but it is a perception among many people in Southeast area working in that Southeast adult school. I get this, same perception. And this is that there's a lot of talk, but we don't see much action. We hear a lot, and the dialogue, and they hear a lot. So here's the problem. The problem seems to be in communication. Either we're not communicating too well. And this is why I think this is a tremendous, this has been the most valuable dialogue we've had, I think, since I participated. Or else we're actually not doing enough. And probably, they're probably, both points are well taken. And then I think the whole crux of the other problem is that unemployment is related to minorities, is that there is a lag among the minorities. In other words, when we start talking about, well, we'll start at the bottom, well, the minorities view this particular position as they've been at the bottom. They've had these opportunities. They've always had the opportunities to get the bottom jobs. There's never been any problem there. The jobs that the white people don't want. But the problem, that's why they're aiming for higher jobs. And I think they've, I've been very happy to have this group here.
Glenn, before you leave, Bob, Glenn, you have a reaction while they're here?
Well, so that this just doesn't end up in talk again for another dialogue session. And also, it seems to me, to follow through what I said earlier, I think that we've got to become concrete and specific. And maybe this is not an action group or not an action group, but at any rate, one person is here who can hear and has got some of the power to say so, and Mike Schaefer has got some power to say so. I would suggest or recommend to them that before the end of the month of January, an office of changing the system be created within this city. An office which is simply set up to change the existing system, which looks over every part of that system in relationship to the things we've been talking about, with the idea of where can we change it in the direction we're talking about. And not only to look at each one, but to think up new ways in which we can create what the resources that these people have, not what the deficiencies are, but what the adequacies are, and where can we find a position within what we have control over at any rate in the city. And also recommend the same creation, and if you want to make it a joint powers, I don't care, with the county. But there be a specific fixed office, and that office should include, as one of the key people, starting at the top, a black man, because he knows about it. To say, this is the system, at least as we perceive it, to be in communication, and give specific recommendations. It seems to me that one of the things we have missed over and over again is that in the last year and a half, this city has done many innovative and creative things, and we let them go down the drain every single time. We say things, and we turn right around with a marked insensitivity and do things which show that we didn't hear the first time. So we say something about the transportation system, about the bus system, and then we send all white people to bring the buses back. And when we had a chance to show on television a few black faces, and if there was any trouble along the way, to say we in San Diego deal with it in a different kind of way. What I'm talking about is a very aggressive position of a fixed responsibility within the power structure of this city to make positive changes on a timetable. Not some dreary time, but after you look at it to say, here we go, January, February, March, April, May, and when June comes, this should be June and January. Right now, we know what we're going to do in June with these young people. The program was started last year, should go on. It should be included in a development, which means that we get more than what Rosemary had. We had a lot of fine people there. They should be able to move up. Not start at the same position. They had the experience last year. They can be supervisors. And it's that kind of thing where I think we've got to fix it with direct action, with an institution within the government, fix to change the government and its whole system, not just civil service, but every single part of it. Mr. Chairman?
Before he goes, we have one from the leadership itself, and then George.
Right. I'd like to ask the question. I asked it once before. I think they had a seminar with our legislation, meet people, or whatever, Josh.
Yeah.
I asked, was there any long-range plans made as far as jobs are concerned about this wall? Because to me, I see that's going to be a problem in this city.
Sure.
You don't even have jobs now for us. And you know yourself, something's going to happen over there. They're going to end it. And every job I see just about is related to on that wall in this town.
Mm-hmm.
You got aircraft and military installations. What's going to happen to us then? We don't have jobs now.
Right.
So I wish somebody would start trying to develop plans for that, because you think you got problems on your hand now. You'll have them when you get older people out here, man.
George, and this is the last one, then I want to see where we're going from here.
This is very good. I wanted to respond to this. Was a part of Glenn's here as you second this recommendation of the necessity here. And I had already written down here, not only should we work with the revamping of civil service testing procedures, but we should rework on the minds of those who are in positions who appoint others in the city. Now, this has been dropped before. Mr. Julian Wise had a beautiful opportunity to appoint a black man as his assistant, but he failed with the opportunity, and he knew that we were concerned about getting a black man in the community relations office here with the city of San Diego. I said that the city was not an opportunist, and they failed in that responsibility. There are other appointment jobs within the city of San Diego that there is no testing procedure on, that they can have black people who can be considered. But I don't know of any who's ever even considered for the job. He just automatically out of the question. So appointments is one that they can do right now. And in connection with what Glenn said, this could be an appointment situation. And we have so many black people in the community who feel that they have a certain rapport, a relationship going on with city officials, that they don't want to jeopardize it by doing certain things which are counteract. And I'm very glad at that, Mr. Chairman. Right now, there's one going on where the city of San Diego has asked a certain representative to go back to Washington who's black to represent them. Well, you see, don't get a man barring from someplace. Hire one. Mary Phelan's supposed to work with minority problems. How in the hell can she work with him if she don't even know minorities? She don't know the problem. Not using what you already have at your disposal to use. You see, we're tired of saying general things. You got to be specific. And for you to know what I'm talking about, I got to tell you. And this is what I'm doing this morning is telling. A general plan has to be made up now. You raised hell for 4 or 5 years to get a city general plan. You've got to get a general plan now that includes black people and other minorities in this city. That's a must. It's the same as it was for you to say it was a must that this city must have guidelines, so must you set up guidelines for black people and include the type of situation which Sada Kifu has just spoke of here about the people who are going to be discharged from the service who got problems.
Now that we've had an excellent experience, we'll wait for you to go out, Bob, if we let you spend another 5 minutes or so. You want to leave now? Would the rest of you now get up, please, yet? I want to thank you for coming. I think it was a rich, enriching experience for all of us. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're at your disposal anytime.
We'd like to have you back many times.
We will be back.
All right. In 2 weeks from today, we meet again. Would the rest of you just hold tight a minute, please? For the past 10 months, past 9 months, we've been talking about the city of San Diego, not just the short year, I mean the whole area, city, the problems and so forth of San Diego. Has that leg been autographed by everybody here, Mr. Shaken?
No.
That's why you brought it to the red carpet. If you put it on the table, we'll sign it as we go by.
I thought you took the level.
Just leave it here. I'll put your leg in it. Pulling your leg. We've been talking about an urgency beyond simply talk, and I think we have it this morning, had it this morning in concrete bodies. They said it best. They said it better than we can. Where do we go from here for tomorrow, the next day, 2 weeks from now? What do we do? Do we simply schedule another dialogue session that's already on the book 2 weeks from now? Pick up more dialogue? Do we come to grips with this? What do we do? Something concrete and short, precise.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we have a lot of things on here that we've been talking about that we want to do, dealing with the same problems that exist here. Now, some of these things we have to be realistic in. Some of them are humanly impossible, but some of the things that we can do. Now, on this, in connection with this 200th anniversary celebration, I'm wondering what happened out of this particular thing. See, we start a whole lot of things, then we finish any of them. Now, next week, there will be a group in here. The National Council of Churches is meeting here in February.
And this thing will have bearing on the 200th anniversary celebration, because the publicity that will go out from here with that group of people from all over the United States will affect the tourists in San Diego in 1969. Now, the situation is a rather dismal. The rather dismal picture is painted when you look at all these places that employ people, jobs where they could have minorities. They do not have them. Now, they have decided there'll be some, I don't know, some close to 1,000 delegates here from all over the United States next month. And I'm passing this information on to you now. They have decided that they're going, and the meeting will be at the U.S. Grand Hotel. And if there's not something concrete when they get here, then they're going to move out and give this publicity to the United States of San Diego. And this will affect this 200th anniversary celebration. Now, I don't know whether we have any minorities on this committee or not.
Yeah, there's some of that.
Functioning minorities, I mean, not in name. I mean, people that are dealing with the programming of this 200th anniversary. Do we have anyone on there that's in a top position?
No.
Not just to have put on the committee when their meeting will be, when the celebration goes into being. Well, now, these are things that we're talking about, things that we can do. We have, and I'm going to say this, I think it's a great opportunity for us now in the Southeast San Diego in particular, and all over our city for that matter. There are funds available for neighborhood centers that can be erected to give training and guidance to the people in the communities. Now, and the only thing that will have to happen is the city will have to make the request. Now, I'm sweating out the request from the city now. I don't know what they're going to do. They're dealing with some type of legal technicality, which doesn't have any ban on anything that we're going to do, and it doesn't cost the city a dime. All they have to do is make a requisition that this particular thing is needed in a certain area. We have the land. We have the money. We have the staff. We have everything. And it's going through four or five different lawyers in the city, the whole city council staff, or whatever it is, whatever they call it. I don't know what they call it in the city. District attorney, that's not district attorney's office.
City attorney.
City attorney's office. And I don't know what they're going to do about it. But I wish it was something that they could. This would add something to some of the things that try to alleviate some of the problems, because we can staff three or four of those people that are in training now to work with people. If they don't want to work with them properly, we can give them people that those jobs.
All right.
And it would have to go through the city manager and the city council's office. I don't know whether Mike has heard anything about it or not. I think we have one attorney here from that committee who they turn those things over to, but I don't know what they're going to do. And they make so much commotion out of something that's going to be helpful. See, here's a project that we as a church is a sponsored organization. We talked about it in the Ministerial Alliance. We have two or three more sites that are available for this type of project from the ministry. But you can't get any hearing from them, and it's not costing the city anything other than to sit down and request that this is a project worthy of this community, and if they can't operate, we will. This is all they have to say.
All right, that's more of the explanation of why the frustration, the feeling of the problem is so well articulated then. I wonder, I'm with you, and we still haven't heard the specific commitment of the 200th anniversary group really to do. I got a letter from them and some of the others.
I got a letter, yeah. From them,
but it isn't really coming to grips with it yet. I don't know when we'll move it that far. But let's see if we can stop right now, though, and get to where we should go here next 2 weeks. That would follow the same agenda. George will be calling a meeting together to look at the agenda. That is the things that we read in his report last time. George will be picking up there to establish priorities on that agenda. You might want to tell him what you want is that priority, I'm saying, and what ought to be done. But George will meet with his group himself. But what are we going to do? We heard a group this morning. They have cut through all of that talk. They have said, look, this is it. Are we going to drop it there?
But what can we do?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. But
we can't do anything. We have decided. We decided when we started that all we would do was come here, sit down, and talk for a couple hours and leave.
No, that is not quite
the whole thing.
Well, what have we done?
No, that is, I'm not answering that either.
Yeah, see, I've been here since the start. I started with it when they uprising down in the Concord. The man said we ought to call in some of the leading Negroes in the community. Listen, and talk about the problems of what we can do. Well, we got down here and we talked. And I raised the question, George raised the question, Glenn raised the question. What are we going to do after we get through talking? And we've been talking here almost a year. And the only thing that we can see that we probably could accredit to this dialogue is that we have some Negro bus drivers and Mexican-American bus drivers. That's all we can point to. And we had to raise hell to get that thing before us. And I kept contending that until we see Negroes on those buses, Mexican-Americans on those buses, then they're not doing what they said they're going to do, and they're in violation of the agreement that they made with the federal government to get funds to qualify, to operate this thing. And then we have them on there. Now, what are we going to do about what these young people saying?
Well, it would appear to me
we have no jobs.
Reverend, my immediate reaction to this would be that we have gotten a commitment from the mayor today to examine this civil service commission examination, which was a real concern. And I know that there are tremendous problems involved with setting up a culture-free examination or culturally unbiased exam. However, and he made the point over and over of this idea of an immediate meeting to get it done. So you ask, what is being done? I think this is one. It's small, but it's moving. The fact that the city has acknowledged the fact that we live in a racist society is another important step. When we started, I made the comment that it was my understanding on these particular dialogue things that we were to voice our concerns to the people in a position to do something about it. I think that they are hearing these things. There are steps being taken. I think that there are some positive steps being taken. This morning was one. Now, I don't want to sound like Pollyanna and say something about faith, but, you know, it's there. Hopefully something will arise, and the comments that were made about programs and office, this idea of an office should be set up to change the system, that's fine. The only thing that bothered me was that a black man should be in charge of it. I don't know. I don't know what the problem is.
You feel I know what the problem is. We talk a whole lot of things about these various things, but I'm on this committee, the mayor's committee for jobs. And we had a great opportunity there to do something. We, from around 2 months, still fumbling.
Let me tell you, let me pick you up and try to pull this back in perspective. If the dialogue session has the value that we started out in having, as just articulated by Phil here and by others in the time, we're missing the other side of the dialogue value, and that is the community groups, your group, NAACP, MAPA, GI4. What happens here then should become the impetus for that group to take up what we've discussed here, the mayor, tomorrow, tonight, this afternoon. NAACP ought to be down there with the mayor talking about what he said he's going to do and put the pressure on him there to do it. NAACP, MAPA. The community groups ought to go from here, not just the public officials. The community groups ought to be making their calendar of events and take up from here precisely what was said and done. Therefore, the group that gets that done is a community group.
How are you going to get to the mayor, Cal, when he says that?
And that is the point there. I mean,
it is the point. You have to get to him.
No,
to
that is not the point.
Because when you call down there, listen, call to the mayor. Wait, I'm not being rude. Now, I call and check on all of these things we've talked about. And the secretary want to interrogate me on what my business is with the mayor.
I set up all kinds of meetings
with you can do it because you are part of the system. I can't do it. I'm on the fringe area.
CIC, Urban League, NAACP set up meetings for all kinds of groups every day with every part of the city structure. If you're having a problem with it, you can call Tom Johnson or anybody else. They can get a hearing with the mayor.
I'm speaking about it. Speaking of Tom, now I work with Tom and all these matters.
They can get a meeting with the hearing. If you don't, that's the purpose of the civil rights group. To put pressure on them, make him have a hearing with you. That's your job. I'm saying here, the community should go back here, the other side of that awareness or what have you, and organize that community group to see to it
that that's done. Therefore, this from here, we have the reactions going out in all directions. The community group model event should say, hey, Mayor, you said so-and-so. We're calling on you tomorrow to see that you follow that through. The city councilman, every day, every hour, groups ought to be calling the city councilman to do something about what they see as the need in their own way, within their own charter, whatever it is. That's the purpose of community groups. I'm saying unless we get this part in the hopper, we're going to miss what community action is all about.
I don't know I'll agree with you, Mr. Chairman, what you're saying, but now I've been trying to get an appointment with one of the councilmen, Mr. Hom, for 2 weeks. I called his office, my secretary called his office, and he makes his own appointments. And you can't ever get him for an appointment. Now, what are you going to do? You can't just keep, you know, these things, you get to run around, and they'll interrogate you when you call one of these officers and find out what, they want to know what your business is.
Bring a report of it to you next time.
Well, he's going to color like he wanted when he gets through with it.
You see, all I can't handle that. All I'm saying is a process here should be that from this dialogue group, the community groups here represented, go back, take it to their boards or what have you, work out their action programs and implement them. See to it that the people who promise to implement them, implement them. That's community organization. That's what it's all about. If this dialogue session is to point it out, we are to take it back to the community group and take it up and do something about it. Rosemary.
Yes, and I think the question should be, really, although I think that the dialogue group should accomplish something, I think the question should be more not what has the dialogue group accomplished, but what have different people accomplished as a result, perhaps, of the dialogue group. For instance, when George said last time before Christmas, take a walk down Broadway, it's all white, the high responses are bad. I would have felt remiss if I hadn't taken that walk down Broadway, if I hadn't gone into the stores and realized, for some of them the first time, there were no Negroes, and decided, well, I'm one, but George said do this, so I better do it. And may I speak to your manager, and why don't you have any Negroes here? And what, do you think I should hire a Negro to hire a Negro? I said, yes. And then left, and don't hire them just because they're not. Well, it's no big thing, but with several stores, and I didn't do all, perhaps I should have, but George kind of charged me with a sense of responsibility. Now, I say that's no big thing because I'm in no real position of power, but if this sense is communicated to Mike or to the mayor or to different ones, I think then what we have to do is look to them. And as a dialogue group, you continually look to them. As community groups, you look to them because the problem is being brought out, the background, the understanding, and that's where you look for the action.
Matt, you had your hand up earlier. Did I get it?
Go
ahead.
Go dances, one black and one white, and automatically the ad would show that it's integrated. I mean, you'd love to go. This is all the picture shows. You know,
great.
The body shop, it was beautiful.
What the body shop?
You represented, I want that to work for you. I think you should get your mouth up GI form and go down and let them know how you feel about it.
I thought you might want me to take dancing lessons.
And the brown bunny?
No.
Mr. Chairman, I think as a part of this, of course I'll bring it up in the agenda committee, but I think as a part of this, some of the people who have been supposedly maybe given a charge or asked to do something or said we think we should, I think some comments as to their reaction, not their reaction, but what they have gone out to do as a result of maybe that comment last time. The mayor, for an example, as Bill said, he said that he would call together the civil service people. I'd like to on the agenda next time to see what the whether or not the mayor accomplished this. You see, we got in a hang up before where the mayor said he's going to call 17 so many businessmen, and the cat never did it. So we passed through the whole summer and no business jobs. So we let him off the hook. So we've got to stop letting people off the hook, for an example. Glenn made an example, asked for an example about setting up an office here. I'd like to know Mr. Wise's comments on this the next time we meet about setting up such an office in the city to revamp the system. Because you see, if Mr. Wise does not do this positively, then I don't think that they really want to, you know, to change this system. Maybe they like it the way it is. But at least we'll know what their thinking is and their ways of action. So let's get a report on their actions from now.
You've got that down on your agenda?
Yeah, I'm going to ask for this on the action, on the action, on the agenda.
All right. Any other comments?
I have a comment. The lady back over here, I think, had a real good comment there when she wants to go into the side effects of your dialogues, what happens. And now this is not firsthand, but secondhand. My wife went to Sears Roebuck to buy some things, and we had been discussing the black people and sales in department stores, and she came back and advised me that she was waited on by a Negro, young, very attractive Negro girl, and I inquired into it, and I found that that Sears Roebuck had put on a number of black people as salespeople in their store. Now maybe this is a side effect of the dialogue.
No.
Might not have been.
But
well,
Sears happened to have been
That's a national policy.
Point, yeah,
that came national.
Yeah. Well, his wife being aware of it as a result of your talking to her would be a direct result.
I
think that's the important thing.
We went back again, and she pointed out the girl that had waited on
I think that's the side effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zenville, who is quite outright. Talking about the violence and nonviolence, and talking about this summer, on March 2nd of this year, there will be a conference on nonviolence at UCSD, March 2nd. The announcements have not come out yet. We'll have those sometime soon. Specific conference room is yet to be chosen, so it can't be announced, but when the announcement comes out, it will be. If you want to get the date down, it's March 2nd. It's probably all day. It's on nonviolence. Then I take it from what has been said, we'll go on with the agenda committee meeting to work off which of those items will be the next item, and you'll get that announcement as agreed upon earlier when we change items on the agenda. What the agenda is, you'll get it early. George, if you see me, we can set up the meeting early so we can get the announcements out along with the minutes. Any other comments before we move?
Can we still depend upon CIC as the coordinating group between the city of San Diego to disseminate information that will throughout the community?
Oh, yes.
And there's still a good relationship between CIC and the city.
I think things are all right.
How does one
get over
the meeting?
Give it to.
We're going to let. Thank you all for coming.
It's on the sheet.
Give it to
Blake. Yeah, he's signed.